This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with their boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Rajan. And last time you spoke to us very passionately about having compassion for ourselves, and in particular about, in your case, having compassion for your doubting mind. So I'm really looking forward to listening to what you have to say this evening.
Very good, thank you. So I guess, let's see what I'm going to talk about. I don't, because I never prepare for my talks, or very rarely, I usually try to speak what comes to my mind. So I just went for a walk with one of my fellow monastic Venerable Chaga here in the monastery, and we went for a little nice, beautiful stroll here. And it's a beautiful weather here, always in Easter time in WA. The weather is just so pleasant here this time of the year. It's not too hot, not too cold. And we went for a walk a little away from the monastery, and it's the peace here in the hills. It's just so profound. So maybe I should talk about peace. One thing, we all have busy lives. I mean, I'm relatively busy these days, even as a monk. We're building a new retreat center in Melbourne, and I'm part of that building team there, and I get pretty busy there on the building site every day. But one thing we can always enjoy, we can always find the peace of mind somewhere. And that peace is always so sweet. Even if you are busy most of the day, never underestimate peace. It's something what nourishes our soul. It's so, like I said, it's so sweet. Having a peace of mind, enjoying the peace, is really something we need to learn to value. Another thing I did today, I was reading The Guardian this afternoon, and there was an interesting article in today's Guardian about near-death experience. I always enjoy near-death, reading about this article, and they were saying how elusive it is to really to try to pinpoint what it means when somebody dies and all these studies on near-death experience. But it's interesting that we all must die. I mean, one day we all get there, sooner or later. There's always going to be in some point in life, you do something always the last time. Whether it's brushing your teeth or driving your car or saying goodbye to your family. But peace is something when we learn to be at ease in the moment. Even in that moment when you are starting to leave this life, and in Buddhism we obviously believe in the reincarnation, we believe in process where death is not one moment. And I thought it was quite interesting that even the science is sort of moving that direction, that they are starting to acknowledge that there is something after. That when we learn to rest in that peace, even the moment of death, when we consider it or when we eventually get there, we learn to be at ease with anything. And the moment of death doesn't have to be scary or overwhelming. It's almost like we learn by meditating and be mindful and appreciate peace and appreciate beauty, that we learn to be at ease even with the death moment, the moment of when you're dying. So never underestimate peace. Learn to appreciate it. Go for quiet places and just stop. Peace is beautiful. And let's say if your day-to-day life is really hectic and you're in your office and many things are happening, try to find peace within you. And one thing what you could do, and I got this from one of my first teachers, actually. I was living in New York and I was going to different meditation places where they taught meditation. And one of my first early teachers said that even in a busy New York, he said, once in a while, just stop when you're walking on a, if any city is busy, New York is busy. But he said, just when you're walking in the street, in amongst all those things, and you're in your head about work or your people, the other people around your life, just stop and feel how you feel in your body. Just breathe into your stomach. And of all these years, it's actually interesting. This is my 20th year with, so to speak, to be with Ajahn Brahm. It's 20 years ago I met Ajahn Brahm in New York when I lived there. And it was 2004, and now it's 2024. So I've been 20 years. It's my 20th year anniversary with Ajahn Brahm. I feel very lucky. And so my teacher said, just stop on a street corner somewhere and just breathe into your stomach. And even now, 20 years later, I still remember that. And I still do that once in a while. It just, life tends to get us. It tends to be, we are, like you were saying, Chris, we're like I talked about last time when I was teaching here, might have been a year ago, I said, you know, one of the things I have a lot of self-doubt. And different people, you have different things. Some people, you have depression, you're guilty, you're whatever it is, you have negative thoughts in your mind. And they can really easily overpower you. But if you keep up with this practice, you start taking away the power of those negative thoughts. Those, you just nibble a little bit from the corner, and eventually you can have a long period of time where they don't actually come to you. And if and when they come back to you, you learn not to associate so much with them. And one thing, what you can physically do is this kind of just mindfulness practice, just being in your head all the time, in this world of self. Just stop. Just listen. Enjoy the quietness. And just breathe into the stomach. Life is not that difficult. It doesn't have to be running around from cradle to grave, so to speak. We are running. I just get this over and done with. Once I get this done, then it will be right. When this work is done, then I can rest. When I get this problem out of the way, then I can meditate. And you will end up doing that rest of your life. You will only end up resting in peace when you die. And in all honesty, that is too late. It is too late to rest in peace when you are 6 feet under. You are already moving to next life. Your mind is taking the momentum, what you're creating now, it will go from life to life. And it's same in Buddhism, we have this idea of kamma, karma in Sanskrit. And it means this idea of whatever you do, you reap in the future. It's not 100% like that, but you know, just to simplify it. But you can see it in your mind. Whatever your mind state is, you do something, that's what you get in the future. You cannot be very angry, frustrated, and somehow think, this will bring me happiness. It doesn't work that way. But if you are relating to the world, the world of your own head inside what's happening, if you relate to that into that own world with kindness, with understanding, with not associating too much with it, let it disappear, not associating with that negative mind state all the time. Learn to relax, and that's what you reap again in the future. So if we learn with this practice, if we keep at it, eventually, not just this life, but when we move, whether you believe in rebirth or not, you know, okay, it doesn't matter so much. You might believe in next time you get born again, maybe you believe in rebirth, jokes aside. But you can see that for yourself. Who would not want to have a peace of mind? It would be when we really look inside of ourselves, how nice it is to have a quiet, peaceful, content mind. So you keep at it. You learn to recognize the peaceful moments. You learn to recognize that those quiet moments, how nice it is when you're taking a break from yourself. World will always keep giving us things. World is never going to stop. There's always going to be something more to learn in life, or more things what the world wants to serve us. But we need to learn to rest while all these things are happening. It will never end. So learn to rest now. So let's try that for a while. I think that's enough talking. We can go Q&A afterwards. But let's learn to rest a little bit here. So take the comfortable seat, cushion, chair, wherever you're sitting. Make sure you are relaxed. And when you feel at ease in your cushion or on your chair, you can close your eyes, because by closing your eyes, you're closing one of the sense doors from the world. And then just breathe into your tummy, into your stomach for a while. Breathe in and feel how nice it is to sit down for a while and just breathe. How nice it is to be in a quiet space for a while and just breathe into the stomach for a while. And then move a little bit more, make sure that you are comfortable in your chair. So go back to the body and just wiggle your body a little bit, move it around one more time. Make sure your neck is relaxed and your hands are just placed just right. We're going to be relaxing just for a short while. Don't get too worried that you have to sit long time and it's going to be uncomfortable. If any that kind of worry comes to your mind, just give yourself a promise that if you need to move, I can move. While meditating, this is not going to be painful. This is going to be nice. And now that we are starting to relax into this posture, sitting, imagine you are sitting in this beautiful place by yourself. You're in the nature, you're surrounded by quietness around you. Pay attention to this quietness. Not all the sounds around you, but what's missing. What is missing is busyness. What is missing is massive crowds around you. What is missing is problems and worries of the world. What is missing is the world. You can leave the world behind. The world is empty. The only thing we have is this body and mind. Again, can you bring your mindfulness back into this body and see how it is? Life, it is breathing in. The heart is pumping somewhere there. The stomach is digesting your food, and the liver is doing its thing, and the muscles are keeping you upright. Your body is like an orchestra which is keeping itself going. Can you see how this beautiful body is just functions, and the more you allow it to be by itself, the more you allow it to relax and not interfere with the body, the more calm and quiet it is. Just rest in this body. This body is good enough. It might not be 100% healthy. Nobody's body is 100%. But it is good enough. Just give kindness to the different parts of the body. We can feel sitting on the cushion and just feeling different feelings underneath our bum, warmth or softness, and just perceive that as kindness. Just allow your legs to relax from your waist down. And again, the same, go back into your stomach and just breathe into the stomach and allow your stomach to relax. And allow your lower back find its own natural curve. And going up from your back into your shoulders. Just allow your right shoulder just to droop down, pull by the right hand. Same with your left shoulder, make sure your left shoulder is pulled by the left hand. And your neck. Make sure your neck is nice and relaxed. And you're just breathing in, relaxing breath into the body, and the body just keeps itself going. It's not your body, it's just a body. Can you see there how much quietness there is if you just observe this body? How calm it is. And now do the same thing with your head. We start going from the neck up. Make sure the back of your neck is nice and relaxed. And the back of your head is always resting on this neck, and can you feel the skull going to the top of the skull, on your forehead? Make sure those wrinkles on your forehead is nice and smooth. and the wrinkles around your eyes. Make sure your left eyeball is nice and relaxed. You need to even relax your eyeballs and the muscles behind the left eyeball. Give them kindness. You've been using your left eye all day. And same with your right eyeball. Can you feel how nice and soft and squishy it is, your right eyeball? And relax it. And all those muscles behind the right eyeball, which actually do the work. Make sure they are relaxed. The muscles around your jaws, make sure your jaw is nice and soft. And just feel your whole face. Can you imagine what your face would look if it's content? If you have enjoyment on your face or expression? Just have an expression of enjoyment of the peace. What would you look if you would be enjoying the peace? If somebody would see your face? And when you imagine the peace and really feel it on your face, everything else starts fading away. if your mind really enjoys the quietness, like the pace where there is nothing happening, the world is slowing down when your mind slows down. When the mind slows down, it always wants to find an object. And in what is really beautiful, it's your breath. So through the contentment, find the breath breathe through the contentment. And see how quiet it is. Hopefully your mind is now starting to calm down. Now start really paying attention to the breath. Look at your breath like it's your friend. It brings you life. Smile at your friend. And then it stays with you when you appreciate it. We are starting to come to the end of the meditation. Bring your awareness back to your body one more time. Can you feel your body is a bit more in harmony? It's a bit more rested. It's a little bit more healthy. And then bring your awareness into this solitude. And quietness of the mind. Do you notice how nice it is to learn to be and appreciate the silence? How the mind is more healthy. Happy when it's quiet. I will now ring the gong, and that ends the meditation. You can then open your eyes. Nice to sit for a while. So, if anybody has any questions, please.
Yes, if you have any questions, if you would put your hand and or wave your hand, and ask your question, or else you're welcome to type your questions or comments into the chat. It's very nice to come back slowly from such a lovely meditation, Ajahn. Thank you.
Yeah, my mind didn't want to stop. I had to realize that otherwise maybe somebody else, others cannot sit too long, but my mind was definitely bit quiet.
Usually it takes a couple of minutes.
Yeah, no rush. That's okay.
I would like to ask.
Thank you, Gloria. Yes, please.
That's good.
Because, at the beginning, I can't really feel like I can do the meditation. And then I have opened my eyes for a while because I usually, I'm very agitated today. But I don't know, sometimes I feel like I got the hang of it and then I just can do it, not really do it, but my mind can become peaceful. But sometimes, no matter how I sit, I just cannot feel peaceful. I would like to ask, what's the cause of peaceful meditation? And I want to understand what has happened, because I sometimes feel a little bit confused because I don't know why it happened. And yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question. What's the cause of the calmness? And I think we. And it would be good if we could somehow, really every time, if we would have an answer, definite answer for what's the cause, why did it happen this time, and how can I make it always happen? Because an unfortunate thing is that even if you have a very peaceful meditation this time, next time you try to do the same thing and it doesn't happen, and so. Striving and doing something is actually counterproductive in meditation. So meditation, the best thing you can do is not to do anything. And being with Ajahn Brahm for such a long time, like I said, I've been now 20 years with Ajahn Brahm. He's always, when you ask him, what should I do? I'm sure there's something I could do. And he says, no, don't do anything. The work should be always be done before you meditate. When you meditate, when you're actually sitting down and meditating, just learn to relax. The more you do, the more you make things worse. So you are carrying now the mind state of what happened today. You are carrying the mind state of how you behaved. How mindful have you been throughout the day? And that's what you're now looking in your mind. So you just have to learn to relate to that mind state, be at ease with it, be at ease in your general overall, how your mind tends to react to the world. So you are, it's almost like it's now giving you feedback. This is who I am. This is how the world is around me. And now the only thing you can do really to do is, okay, this is what has happened, and I can just be at ease with it. You won't find some kind of a perfect place to meditate, or perfect health to meditate, or perfect mind state. You are now putting in the seeds of the future, for the future. So what causes good meditation to happen is acceptance. It's really is, there is no other way. You cannot crush your mind with the mind. That's the worst thing you can do. The only thing is to sort of just cultivate this kind of understanding that it's none of my business. What should you do? Don't do anything. That's the best. And if anything you can really do is try to add kindness into that. And look, quite often when I teach meditation, I say, you know, look at your breath like it's a friend. And I was actually in Finland a year ago and I was teaching this in this Thai temple, and then I kept telling people, you know, like look at the breath like it's a friend and keep observing like a friend. And then this lady asked me afterwards, like, why do we need to look at the breath like it's our friend? Because when you look at it as like your friend, something, you look at it with kindness. That's the only thing you can really do, is adding kindness, however it is. And me as a teacher, I'm trying to sort of cultivate like nice ways of looking the breath, nice way of for you to relax. So the best method I ever came up with is sort of like, the breath is very, it's a very, as an object, it's not interesting. Honestly, in the, you know, in this kind of short meditation, breath doesn't want to stay with you. And how you do it is you try to hold it with force, and you try to hold your meditation, your breath with aggressiveness. You don't even realize, but you might be very aggressive in a sort of subtle way. But if you look at the breath, for example, as a friend, you just want to, you go in your la-la land of your own world, in your head, but then, oh, where's my friend? And there's like, oh, my friend is there. The breath is your friend. So you always want to go back to that. So that's sort of like a means, good mean to do. So, look, once in a while it happens, but why it really happens is really difficult to pinpoint. Really is difficult. And every day is different. Every mind is, you know, every mind moments is different. But if you give it a lot of value, or if you've been aggressive with them, you try to push them away, they never end. It will never end. The best thing to do is, okay, those are the mind states, those are the thoughts, those are the things. None of our business. I'm just relaxing here. They will never end. So what causes good meditation? It's letting go, being at ease, you know, finding, relaxing, just learning to relax, enjoy the quietness. That's the only thing I know.
Isn't like thinking like it is none of your business kind of like indifferent?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, maybe it is indifferent. But at least it's sort of like you're not adding. It's this kind of like indifferent, but it's, don't think it as a, like sometimes we have this word, Pali word, upeka, which is translated quite often as a equanimity. Quite often people have aggressive equanimity. If it's real equanimity, upeka, it's this kind of like, my kamma, my karma has nothing to do with me. These mind states are just sort of, it's almost like they're not yours. Or if you really have equanimity, upeka, it's sort of like they just fade away and you don't get involved with it. It's a bit hard to explain, but it's sort of like you develop this kind of, like I said last time I was talking about, I gave this speech about the, like very easily I can slip into this kind of mind state of doubt. My mind wants to go there. I can be doubtful about anything. And a lot of people have anxiety, for example, seems to be a very common, people ask us, you know, how do I do it with anxiety? It's, you really learn with these, all these things, you're like, that's my mind. That is my mind. And you learn to just be at ease with it, just let it go. Nothing to do with me. That's the best you can do. Okay,
thank you, Ajahn, and thank you, Gloria. I have a message. I have a question in the chat. Would you mind if I read it for you?
Sure, that's good.
I would like to ask Ajahn on how do we practice to let go of fear for the future, for sickness, for old age, and other stuff. I even heard that your last thoughts before death determines your next rebirth, and it sounds scary. Could you kindly give us some insights on this?
Sure. It's a very common idea, and I'm sure this person is a Sri Lankan person who's asking this question. But because the last mind moment is it's thought quite often in certain circles. The best thing I can do is one of my favorite suttas. It's there's a Mahanama was dying. I just briefly go through the sutta. It was a Mahanama was dying, and he was Buddha's cousin, and he was actually quite attained already, but he was afraid because he knew he was going to get reborn. And he asked Buddha to come and said, look, I'm sick, I'm going to die soon. So I asked Buddha to come, and the Buddha came to him and he says, you know, I'm afraid, what's going to happen to me? And as the Buddha said, don't worry, Mahanama. He said, what do you think? If there's a tree which is leaning towards west, and then four strong men come and they cut the tree down from the root, which way is it going to fall? Is it going to fall towards north, south, east, or west? And the Mahanama said, of course, it will fall down to the west because it's leaning towards west. And the Buddha said, the same way, Mahanama, if you have respect towards the Buddha, the Dhamma, the teachings, and the Sangha, and your sila, quite often, Ajahn Brahmali translates sila as kindness, your overall goodness of the heart, your straightforwardness in life, your morality, however you want to translate your sila, this kind of goodness of your heart, your tree is always leaning towards one direction. So that kind of thing, always remember your karma, we say kamma in Pali, it's your work. You're putting in a seed now. So you're putting in those seeds, whatever you're putting into the ground now, that's what you reap in the future. If you put potatoes in the ground, you're not going to get sunflowers. I don't think so. You don't put, you know, put seeds of potato in the ground and expect something else to come out of it. So whatever you're seeding now, and whatever, Ajahn Brahm has the beautiful thing where he always says that, you know, water the flowers, not the weeds. It's the same idea. You have a certain kind of like you, it's very easy to water those, like I said, for me, doubt. It's very easy for me keep adding the water off the, you know, into the doubt. I'm no good. I'm a hypocrite. However you want to, you know, that little head in your, in little voice in your head. You know, I want to water that all the time. But I have to be, it's actually wisdom. You know, in Buddhism we call that wisdom, not putting too much emphasis that on that. Sure, I mean, okay, so there's doubt again. I'm doubting myself. I'm not going to put more water for those weeds. I'm going to instead emphasize something, other things in my life. Not pay so much attention. That's mindfulness and that's wisdom in action. And well, when I'm not watering those weeds, the doubt, I will then reap, you know, the benefits of that in the future. And that's kamma. So whatever you do, okay, you are afraid of old age, sickness and death. It's interesting. I think I gave a Dhamma talk about it because I've been now in Buddhist Society of Victoria for couple years there, and I've been giving talks there, and I think I gave a talk or guided meditation about how I'm afraid of being in diapers again. And I don't mean diapers in next lifetime. I'm worried about being diapers in this lifetime again. In, you know, in English we have this saying about how does it go? Baby, men once, baby twice, or something like that. You know, adult once, Yeah, Nikki just said it, but it's like it's something like, you know, like you are twice a baby and once an adult. So basically you start with diapers and you end up in diapers. And it's literally it's a bit of a scary thought to be in those diapers again in this lifetime. So it worries me. But what can I do about it? Not much. When the time comes, I will be in diapers again. The only thing I've done now is I put the effort of being kind, being accepting. So then people will come to me when I'm in diapers. I'm in an old person's, old monk's home, hopefully. They will come and turn me around once in a while, you know, change me diapers. I will be just accepting. I will be happy that those people are actually helping me. I won't be so embarrassed when they are poking me or probing me and all those things. As we all know how embarrassing it is when we are in, you know, we cannot do certain things for us any, ourselves anymore. So what we can do about it? We want to get old. We don't want to die now. We want to get old. What can we do? Learn to be accepting. Learn to have this kind of like appreciation for others to, who can take care of us. Not to be, you know, develop all these things like loving kindness. So when you are there in the diapers and somebody will take care of me, I won't be so embarrassed about it. It's just a body, not my body, a body. Do you see? See, all of these things, it has a far-fetching benefits for us. We won't be healthy forever. We won't be healthy forever. So practice now, and then you will reap those benefits later. Makes sense, right?
Thank you, Ajahn. Is there anyone else who would like to unmute and ask a question? Yes, Nikki, would you like to unmute?
Oh, you saw me. That's good. Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Ajahn. I heard you talk about that talk, actually, the one you just said. I do listen to you in the other menopause, I can't remember what your society's called.
Yeah, Buddhist Society, Victoria. Yeah.
Yeah, I listen there and I'm on the Discord.
Yeah, that's good as well, yep.
And I was listening to, it was nuns actually, they were talking about, and there was a lot, it was, a lot of people that were asking them questions were mums. And that's unusual that I hear that. They were talking about their struggles with their sons. There's lots of different types of relationships. And the one thing they said about was guilt.
Mm.
So when you said about your mind, your self-doubt is a big feature. Mine is guilt to do with a son in particular. So I wanted to ask you about the process they talked about, because it was a recording, I couldn't ask them, and they said to break that like cycle of guilt is to be with the guilt, don't fight it. I don't know how to do that.
Mm.
So it's like, it sounds like very, in theory, like really easy to do, but in practice, I suppose it's not, yeah, as easy. So they talk about, you know, like the sensation and feelings of guilt. This is not healthy guilt, this is the guilt that's, I just don't want this anymore, Ajahn. Mm-hmm. I've carried this guilt around my son for probably many lifetimes, and I can feel that it's quite karmic, and I just don't want to entertain it anymore, because it's not very useful. At least I see that.
Mm.
That's new, actually, I realise it's not very useful.
Well, I mean, that's really good. I mean, you created this little bit of distance to that until you, if you own something and it's like people feel guilty about letting go of the guilt. As a mom, you should feel guilty, right? You know, like if I let it go, well, what kind of mum am I? I should feel guilty, but just that realization that it's like, hang on, I don't have to carry this everywhere I go. It doesn't make things any better. You already created that little space where you can put other things. So that would be, you know, like, so just trying to encourage you that it's like, okay, good. Be able, you know, have a mind where you can just sort of like, I can let this go. I don't have to feel guilty. So then you start putting the other things there. One thing you also have to realize that as a person, you know, you are your own individual, and you're in Buddhism we have the idea of karma, kamma. We carry our own kamma ourselves. There's nobody else. You think you are, as a mother, responsible for your son, or their actions, or what has happened to them, or this and that, the other. You have to realize that you are actually not doing that much. They are just behaving according to their own karma. They are individually on their own karma. Even though you might feel a bit, maybe it's a bit cold to think as a mother, you think you should have done something better, or not do certain things, whatever it is. They are responsible for all their own karma. Whatever action you do, you cannot just disown it. It doesn't work that way. Even though in Buddhism we believe this idea of non-self, you are inheriting your own actions, good and bad. So it's not all bad. You know, there's good things there as well. But how can you let go of the guilt? Well, practicing mindfulness and meditation is actually giving you the feedback. So you keep at it. I don't have the right answer. You have the answers inside of you. Like you said, they're coming to you. But if you give it the space, and the space it is sitting quietly, once in a while stopping and realizing the guilt is just so bad, so strong at the moment. You cannot see anything but the guilt. It's Ajahn Brahm, the hand is too close to your face. You need to put it to the distance. The guilt is still there, but it's at the arm's length. How do you get this arm stretched away? How do you get this guilt a little bit of distance? Pay attention somewhere else. That's one method. Like I said, one of my teachers said, just stop. Hang on. I didn't realize I was in my head and the guilt was everywhere and I could not see anything but the guilt. Pay attention to your body, for example. How does my body feel? And quite often, body actually, it gives you like, it's a nice feedback. Quite often, you are tense. You are carrying the world and your shoulders are crunched or something. Just by being kind towards your body, just relaxing, you don't feel so bad about it anymore. So learn those kind of methods. Have different kind of tools in your tool bag, like just physical kindness towards your body. Create that kind of distance to that a little bit. And then you still have the guilt, but it's at the arm's length. And when you have those moments, it doesn't exist at all. You realize how nice it is not to have it, not to have to carry it. Mm-hmm. And those give you that fact that when you have that kind of like, wow, I had one moment when I wasn't guilty, I wasn't thinking about this problem. It's such a relief, and your mind then always wants to go towards that. So you just have to, you have to find it yourself. And keep listening to Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Brahmali, all the other nuns and monks and all that. And you will, eventually will come to you. Because otherwise, like you said, you will maybe carry it from life to life.
Thank you.
No worries. Anything else? Chris, you're muted.
You're muted, Chris.
Yes, you, Chris, up here.
Very nicely said. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ajahn. A comment here. I follow the Monday BSV meditations and really enjoy and benefit from Ajahn Mudito's talks and meditations. They're always practical and human and humble. I really appreciated what you were also saying just now about guilt. That's personally from me, but the comment comes from somebody in the group tonight.
Sure. Sandra, do you have something to say? You see, Chris, Sandra has raised her hand.
Sandra, would you go ahead?
Yeah.
Is there somebody else who would like to go ahead?
Yeah, Sandra, no, you please. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, Sandra. Yes. Thank you, Sandra, please.
Thank you for your presence, Ajahn. I have a question about, you restrain your sense desires and you try to so my question is about when you see that something that you want is coming and you understand that and you see the benefits of just not indulging such desires, whatever they might be. And when you practice that for a while and you see that you can actually win them and you understand them, that they are impermanent and they will just go away, is maybe when you see that and you feel like, I feel like, okay, I see you again, you again appeared, and I know I can defeat you. And it will just go away, and I feel like proud in a moment. Is like that? Is some danger in that feeling that you're here again and you'll go away? I don't know if that makes sense.
So okay, sure. So is there danger feeling proud about not getting involved with that? Look, I think it's a good. It's okay to feel good about yourself, and so your question was and maybe others didn't understand, but your question is more like sense restrainment, and it's a big thing. And in Buddhism, we teach quite a lot of sense restrainment, and it sounds very like what we all should be monastics and all that. No, it doesn't mean that. It just means you're simplifying your life. As a layperson, there's a certain things you have to have. You need to have a food and you have to have a place to stay and you have to have your certain kind of human relationships. But you simplify your life like, this is good enough. This is what I have. This is what brings me actually happiness in life. Not that Ajahn Brahm has that thing where when you want something, you can always ask yourself, and then what? I get the latest iPad, and then what? Then I get all the software for it, and then what? And then maybe when that goes, and then what? You can always sort of like, and that's one way of ending that kind of like loop, like if I would just get this, and then I would be happy, and then what? So, no, it's okay to feel proud about yourself and I sort of stopped this loop. It doesn't bring me happiness. No, I would say you're okay with that. So feel proud about yourself and feel good about that, stopping that loop. You are leaning towards the right direction. So that's okay.
Thank you. It's now time, I guess, to think about saying goodbye, Ajahn. Ajahn, would you like to leave us with a blessing this evening?
Sure. I'm not sure. I'm trying to think. Do I know any English chants? I don't usually, because I do in Pali. So
you can give us a chant in Pali.
Okay. So I'll do. This is a very quite a traditional one. Sri Lankan. And a lot of Sri Lankans, you know this. And basically, we can think of all the people around you who have benefited from, who have helped you, all that thing. So all this practice you have done today, dedicate all the goodness you have done now, just sitting quietly, trying to understand Buddha's word, trying to understand what makes you happy. All this happiness you have created now, we sharing with others while I'm chanting this traditional Pali chant. Idang vonyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vonyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vonyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So that's for the happiness of all your friends and loved ones. All the goodness you have done, we share with them. Very good. Thank you so much. It was nice to see you all. See ya.
Thank you.
Maybe,
thank you,
maybe next year.
See ya.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mani. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.